Well, I'm back, and we are about to be joined by Mr. Peter Flaherty, who is going to take us on another destination worldview. And it's always a pleasure to chat with Peter. Good morning. How are you this morning, Peter?
Fine, thanks, Roy. Glad to be back.
We were just chatting a little bit on the phone, and you just could try and speak up just a little bit louder.
Is that all right?
That's perfect.
Okay.
Peter, where are you going to take us today? I understand we're going to go to a wonderful spot in Spain.
Italy, actually.
Italy, yeah. Yeah, right. I don't know.
Get the countries right.
It's been a long morning. Yeah.
I understand. No, we're going to Siena, which is a beautiful medieval city in Tuscany. I've come to know it quite well. I've been over there the past 3 summers for 2 weeks in July teaching summer course to some Canadian high school seniors. There's a company here called Blythe Education that runs the courses, and so I'm working, but I'm also a tourist there, and it's just a beautiful city. There's so much to see. It's a medieval gem.
The gem of medieval Italian art and architecture.
Exactly.
And you also mentioned, which I think is interesting, that there's been a long-running rivalry between Siena and Florence dating back to medieval times, and that even continues to the present day. Is that correct?
Yes, it sure is. It's quite an interesting historical sidelight to the city. Most people are familiar with Florence. I think a number of people know Siena, too, but Siena, I think, always feels kind of in Florence's shadow. And if you go back to the Middle Ages, actually, Siena was politically even a more important city. Culturally, too, there's a long rivalry. Just give you one little kind of amusing story. Just before the Black Plague struck in the 14th century, Siena was planning a big renovation of its cathedral so that it would be bigger than Florence's. And the Florentines found out, and so the local legend goes, they arranged to have a cadaver infected with the plague thrown over the walls of Siena, which until that point had been free of the plague, to bring the poison to the city so they wouldn't be able to continue with the cathedral renovations, and apparently that stopped it.
How bizarre.
That's a true story, but it's sort of part of the local legend.
And a very bizarre story as well.
Yeah. They have rival football teams, you know, in Italy soccer is a national passion, and they have they back different sides in the Middle Ages, and it's just really amazing to me how history lives there, and everyone I met there is a local amateur historian with his or her own views of why their city should be even more important than it is, especially compared to Florence.
Exactly, and you say the old town has been preserved in all its medieval and Renaissance glory, which is also interesting that they've been able to do that for so many years. Yeah. And there was another interesting note. There's a lot of them, but this one in particular, here where you talk about here logic is a lot different than you'd expect it to be anywhere else. I've found it in a lot of the countries. You have to think illogically.
Well, you have to think a little differently. The Sienese are certainly a special breed. They know what they have with their city. As I mentioned, Giancarlo is the chef at the hotel I stayed at. I got to know him quite well. He basically said that in Siena, you are a member of your contrada, or your local neighborhood, first. Then you're a Sienese. Then you're a Tuscan. And maybe fourth, and far least importantly, you're an Italian. So when you go there, you really have to kind of take the place as it is. They know what they have. They attract a lot of tourists, but they don't really bend over backwards to change their ways to suit the visitors. So when you go, it's really, you know, they say when in Rome, well, I think I would say when in Siena, and multiply it maybe by 10 or even 100, and you'll have a good time.
That makes a lot of sense. And now, you say, well, it's possible to access parts of the city by car, the far best way to appreciate it is on foot, and
yes.
I found that true of many, many places. In fact, we're going to chat about that with Suzanne Wright when she did a little stroll through San Diego later on in the show. Mm-hmm. But walking through the city, kind of take us through that a little bit, if you will.
Well, the place you're going to start from, and that's really the most famous and deservedly most famous place in town, is the main square. It's called the Piazza del Campo, or just the Campo for short. It's not really a square, as I describe it in the article. It's sort of laid out in the form of a scallop shell, and it really dominates the town. And from there, you know, once you've seen it, and it's just a magnificent thing to see for the first time with all the buildings surrounding it and the big clock tower, towering over the whole place. And that's, of course, where they run the famous Palio horse races every summer, which Siena is like world famous for.
Right.
If you start in the Campo, and you can really go out just about any way your fancy takes you. There's a number of little streets. You can walk up to the cathedral. You can walk down to other churches, sort of at different ends of town. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit confusing. You might be worried about getting lost, but really, I think like Venice, it's a city where getting lost is half the fun, and it's so small that you can't really get too lost before you come across a landmark and are able to reorient yourself. But I really think that the best way to see it, to appreciate it, is not just to stay in the areas where Siena gets a lot. In the summer, Siena can get quite crowded with day tourists, and I really strongly recommend to people thinking of visiting that they give it a little more time and certainly see the important sites like the cathedral and the Campo, but get away from the beaten track and off into the little neighborhoods of the city and really appreciate the city the way it, you know, the way the people who live there do, and not just sort of get stuck in a tourist a rat race.
Now you mentioned that inside the Palazzo itself is the Civic Museum.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting museum. It's an important, in fact, it's still used for official purposes today. It's in what we would the Palazzo Pubblico, or we would call it the City Hall. Siena's had a very democratic municipal government, really dating back from the Middle Ages, and inside that museum, which is part of City Hall, you can see a number of beautiful frescoes. There's one I mentioned in the article in particular I found quite interesting. It's called The Effects of Good and Bad Government, and it's really kind of like a political propaganda piece, in a way, justifying and glorifying the kind of government that they once had and showing how good government can bring happiness and peace and prosperity to people. And on the other hand, bad government can lead to all kinds of vices and immorality and corruption. And it's a lesson that's probably not lost on people today when they think about politics.
And once again, say that Siena was one of the most powerful, important urban centers in central Italy at a point.
Yes, it was. It really rose to fame in the Middle Ages because it was right on a major trade route linking Rome to into France, going up through the Alps, which are further north than Tuscany. And Siena really made its fame. There's, I think, the oldest bank, certainly the oldest bank in Europe, they claim the oldest in the world, was founded in Siena. And it really was a very rich city. It was culturally, economically, politically very important, and won a major battle against Florence in the 13th century to establish its supremacy. But gradually, I think that in the article, I think one of the main reasons that it went downhill was that, unlike Florence, it didn't have an access to a reliable water supply. And, you know, in those days, water powered just about everything. Florence had a river. Siena is sort of on a hill. It didn't have that. They tried some ingenious ways of bringing water in, but in the end, they just weren't able to sustain their competition, and Florence gradually wore them down. And by the 16th century, Florence had really subdued Siena. And in fact, there's a fort just outside the town that's quite worth seeing. It was built by the Medici family, who were, of course, the famous rulers of Florence at that time. And the Sienese they know that it's a beautiful fort, and they've put a wonderful wine bar there. They have jazz festivals there, but in a way, they kind of don't like to talk too much about it because it's a reminder to them of how their city was once great and came under the heel of their hated rival. So it's another example of how pretty old rivalries and enmities continue to this day.
But they did construct a series of elaborate tunnels that they brought the water in from.
That's right, they did, and I haven't taken the tour of those, but I understand it is possible to arrange a special tour of those with the local tourist board. I mentioned that they're still used, and one of the best places for Italian ice cream and coffee and pastries, Nannini, which is sort of a famous local cafe, still uses the underground tunnels to cool their fridge. So you see how the medieval technology is still alive.
Still in place. Amazing.
Right.
Now, tell us a little bit about the renowned horse race and how it relates to the Contras.
Right. The Contradas are neighborhoods. There are 17 that were laid out in medieval times. Now, of course, the city's grown very much since then, but these 17 Contrade, as they're called, are really like the local neighborhoods that each compete during the Palios, which are two horse races. They have one in July and another one in August. They have them every summer. They're run right around the main square, the Campo. They clear the square, and they put sand down for the racetrack. They draw a lot so that only 10 of the neighborhoods actually get to enter a horse, and then those that miss out get first chance for the second one. But it really is the center of Siena's tradition. I mean, the whole city comes to a stop, and there's such incredible competition among the various neighborhoods to hire the best jockey, get the best horse, and do whatever just about to make sure that they win. It's winning is a great honor, and the neighborhood just goes wild with celebration when they do, and it attracts attention from all over Italy and really the world. It's covered on national Italian television, and the square is packed. I think it can hold at least 50,000 people who just stand in the heat waiting to watch this race, and the race itself maybe only lasts 2 or 3 minutes. I think they go 3 times around the track. Even if a rider is thrown, the competition is quite fierce. There aren't too many rules. And
I thought that was particularly amusing, that even if he is thrown, yeah, and the horse makes it across on its own,
right,
he wins anyway.
That's right. So they even have a local television channel. I call it All Palio all the time. Whenever I turned it on, they were basically just showing reruns of old Palio races dating back to, well, I guess the first, you know, moving pictures in the 1920s. But the race itself has been held annually since the Middle Ages, and it really is a wonderful example of how these... It's not an invented tradition. Of course, it attracts tourists, but this is something that the Sienese really do for themselves, and it's just it's a fascinating insight into it. There's a movie that was made called The Last Victory, which I saw recently, and if any of your listeners get a chance to see it, it's sort of the next best thing to being there, because it really takes you inside a neighborhood and how the competition to win the Palio just sort of dominates everyone's attention in the weeks.
Peter, the photographs are incredible. It's a great article. There's obviously it's much more in depth than we've just chatted about.
We touched on a few things.
Right, we sure have. And those that have access to their computer, if you go to our website, ttrn.com, and go to Destination Worldview, you will find Peter's article in depth. Peter, we've got to run. I thank you once again. It's always a pleasure. And I look forward to the next time we speak.
Me too. Thanks a lot, Ron.
All right. Bye-bye okay, for now.
Bye.
Peter Flaherty, a gentleman, and has some really, really, really good in-depth things in his article, and I think it certainly is worth your while to, if you haven't already, go to it, read it. It's a really good, informative piece. I've got to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to take a little stroll through Santa Monica and San Diego with Suzanne Wright, which should be fun.